The following is intended only for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Ladies and gentlemen, horror enthusiasts, and dedicated fans of the eerie unknown, welcome to another episode of the Anthology of Horror podcast. I'm your host, Spring-Heeled Jack, and I am delighted to guide you through the shadows in this first episode of the first ever holiday special. As we approach the most wonderful time of the year, we find ourselves in the weeks leading up to Christmas, a season of joy, celebration, family, and surprisingly, a period where the airwaves are eerily quiet in the world of podcasting. But fear not, dear listeners. I will not be taking a holiday hiatus. No. Instead, I give you a special treat reserved for the true champions of terror, the super loyal fans who stand unwavering in their commitment to the macabre, no matter the time of year. In the spirit of the holidays, we extend a warm welcome to both seasoned fans and those just discovering the dark wonders of Anthology of Horror. Picture this as a virtual gathering around the flickering candlelight where we, the devoted few, come together to explore the realms of the supernatural during a time when others might be distracted by tinsel, twinkling lights, and mindless consumerism. While the world outside may be wrapped in festive cheer, we understand that the call of the mysterious and the chilling never takes a holiday. So to our dedicated listeners who will listen come hell or high water, these holiday episodes are for you. It's a gift from the depths of the unknown, a token of appreciation for your loyalty and unwavering support. Thank you very much for being the steadfast souls who make this show possible. Happy holidays. And welcome to the Anthology of Horror Podcast Holiday Special, a beacon of spine-chilling delight in the silent nights before Christmas. This was a very long-winded intro. I don't care. This story is called Track Santa. Tradition, it seems, is something people do not mess with, especially when it comes to Christmas. Take the Christmas tree, for example. Heaven knows why, but every December, I have to climb into an attic I barely use, fumble through the cobwebs that have gathered in every direction, and pull that aging box down once again. Then we open the box and peer down at those decorations that have been there since the 80s, Then we hang the same tired decorations so they can sit there, in the way of everything, taking up the little space that is left, for the sake of a few festive weeks, only for me to have to take them down again weeks later and brave that damn attic once again. Turkey. A dry, detestable meat. A cuisine that has nothing on chicken, beef, or pork. Even gravy does not liven it up. Yet, it's Christmas, and tradition dictates that it's what we eat. So that is indeed what we eat. Secret Santa at work, the worst of traditions, yet it seems to operate in every office in the country. But it's okay because there's a price limit, so it won't be too expensive. The same traditional excuse. But let's be honest. No one wants a present that costs below 10 pounds. It's a waste of money to buy somebody perfume, of which they probably could have chosen better themselves. Anything that we would like that costs below 10 pounds, we would just buy ourselves. Because let's face it, it's cheap. Why wouldn't we just get it for ourselves? And as the present is anonymous, I have to pretend that I don't notice Mary Joy from accounting beaming at me as I open it. And I have to pretend not to be irritated by a pair of lovingly yet poorly knitted socks that even the charity shop wouldn't want. And yet we do it, because it's tradition. And people get immensely irate if you mess with tradition. There is, however, one tradition that I will never mess with, and I would never want to remove. It's the one tradition that makes the season worth it. The tradition that makes me excited for the 364 days leading up to it. It is a tradition that takes place on Christmas Eve between me and my son. You see, me and his mother, we don't speak anymore. We divorced almost 5 years ago now, and because of a long and discreet affair on her part. The sad thing is, even though she was the one who spent 14 months having sex with her coworker, I was still the one who begged her not to leave. So how pathetic does that make me? She fucks him for over a year, and I'm still the one who grovels. So now, much against the vision of a life I had imagined for my 40s, I am the stereotype of a part-time dad, seeing a kid at the weekend, having to force a difficult relationship, knowing he's far closer to the stepfather that he lives with. And it kills me. It really does. And for this reason, I would truly, truly have nothing unless it was for Henry. And every Christmas has been the same for these past 5 years. Every Christmas Eve to Christmas morning, he has his time with me before he's collected by his stepfather to have a large, festive Christmas feast with my ex's family, to celebrate and laugh and be merry while I sit in front of a tired Christmas film, drinking too much liquor, and having a wank wearing a Christmas hat, as if to find some joy in the holiday season. I do everything I can to make this time the best time he's ever had. I fail, but I do it anyway. And the one thing, the one damn thing he asks for every year without fail is this tradition that I treasure so dearly. And this tradition involves a website that has become very popular and has even been developed into an app. It's called Track Santa. And every year, without fail, we sit there in our Christmas onesies with our mince pies and our hands cupped around our hot chocolate, warmed by the small, unassuming fire, and watch this website to see where Santa Claus is. Santa typically starts in the South Pacific and moves west, as says the website. And now, as we sit there, watching, the website reads, "Santa is in New Zealand." Henry gets so excited, waving his arms around and looking up at me with that adorable grin that he has. Man, I miss that grin. So cheeky, yet so innocent. It was the same grin that his mother used to have. I feel the need to cry, but I promise myself that I won't. Not yet, at least. Oh, how that would ruin his Christmas if his father was to burst into tears in the middle of their favorite Christmas activity. No, the tears can wait until Henry's in bed. Then the real festivities can begin. The excessive consumption of sherry, with a break to put Henry's presents under the tree before I return to the armchair for a jolly cry. The tracker changes once more. Santa is in Australia. Henry waves his arms again. Why was it that I did not receive complete joint custody again? Why was I only given weekends? What had her lawyer said? My house is too small, my life is too empty, my patience is too short. In truth, none of the cited reasons are true. The real reason I wasn't given complete joint custody was because I lacked the gumption or confidence to fight for it. I've never been much of a fighter. The closest I ever came to a fight was when an overweight bully at school said he would punch me. I negotiated with him, and he agreed that my lunch, my math homework, and 10 pounds would be sufficient payment to avoid assault. I look at my son, and I hope he grows up with more confidence than I was afforded. Now, you know, when he gets to Japan, that's when it's time for bed. But Dad, there's still so many more countries to go before he gets to us. Even being called Dad is no longer special. I was once, until he called his stepfather Dad too. There can't be two of us. And I wonder how long it is until I'm phased out altogether. We have another mince pie and another hot chocolate, and then the screen changes once more. Santa is in Japan. Right, I declare, time for bed. I take him upstairs, sit with him as he brushes his teeth, I wasn't aware he could brush his teeth on his own now, but he seems to be doing a pretty good job. And I take him to his barely used bedroom. I sit beside him and engage in another tradition, the reading of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." He's asleep by the time I name the last reindeer. I still finish it, not wanting to be away from him. When I'm done and he's gently snoring, I kiss him on his forehead and I whisper, "Good night, old chap." I always used to call him old chap. It was a little joke when he was a baby, and he used to pull faces like a grumpy old man. It always made his mother laugh. I doubt that he even remembers. I turn off the light, and I leave a gap in the door. I walk downstairs, and I don't wait another second before opening the cupboard and taking out a bottle of sherry. I empty its contents into my glass and place it in the recycling, next to two other empty bottles. I put it to my mouth and I don't bother taking in the aroma, as you should do with good sherry. I just gulp the whole glass down in one, and then open another bottle and I refill my glass. I lean against the side, sipping the cherry now, albeit slightly more quickly than the average person might, and the laptop I see is still open. Santa is now in the United Kingdom. Wow, that was fast. I thought he was all the way over in Japan. And it's just after 10 o'clock. Still a bit too early in the night for him to arrive here quite yet. Then again, why am I caring so much? It's hardly real, is it? Henry's gone to bed. Tradition's over. Now it's another year until we spend another special moment together. That's even if he wants to come back next year. Eventually he'll learn the truth about Santa and he will lose interest in the website. Then what? I'll hardly still be reading him "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" when he's a teenager, will I? Maybe that's when he'll decide to cut me out of his life for good, to remove all toxic influences, to reject all the losers. I turn back to the sherry bottle, replenish my glass, and I turn around and drink some more. Only at Christmas does one get drunk on sherry. Normally it's whiskey or beer. Yet at Christmas, tradition dictates that one just doesn't get drunk, but gets posh drunk. I snort a laugh at the thought. At least I amuse myself. I notice the screen on my laptop has changed yet again. Santa is in your street. Huh, I grunt. That's new, I don't remember ever seeing that before. I mean, maybe it knows I'm in the United Kingdom because of my IP address or something. That way it tells you when he's closer. But I've only ever seen it do countries. Strange. I think nothing more of it. I open the cupboards. I have an unopened pack of mince pies. I reckon I could get through them all in 10 minutes. Challenge accepted, I say to myself, once again prompting my own amusement. I take the mince pies and begin my walk to the living room, ready to watch It's a Wonderful Life and know how, unlike Jimmy Stewart, no angel would ever show up and suggest I don't kill myself. But something attracts my attention. I stop by the laptop, sure that I had seen something incorrectly and that it was just a trick of the mind. But no, it wasn't. I read the screen again. Santa is in your house. Now that is creepy. I'm not sure the website should go that far. Good thing that Henry isn't here, it would completely freak him out. It was bad enough saying that he was on my street. I mean, a noise from the chimney attracts my attention. The fire goes out. Dust puffs down the fireplace, and I can hear somebody jingling. What the fuck? I stare at the fireplace, awaiting something, and the screen blinks yet again. The website has changed. The colors have gone darker red, more like a blood red. The font has gone a dark, more sickly green. And the website is no longer called Track Santa. Somehow, it has reset itself. Now it's entitled Track Krampus. What the hell? I walk up to the laptop and I click the X at the top of the window and nothing happens. I try again, clicking and clicking. The website does not close. I hold down the power button. Try freezing with no power, I taunt it, and I wonder why I'm verbally arguing with the computer, yet the power does not switch off. I hold it down longer. I hit it in multiple taps. I do everything I can, but it doesn't work. I press Control-Alt-Delete, but nothing happens. The screen is completely stuck. More dust puffs down the fireplace. There is the sound of something gently thumping the wall behind it, like steps, but bigger. Like hooves. I have to get out. That's what I have to do. Henry, I gasp, a sudden reminder that my son's life is at stake. I turn to the stairs, but I'm interrupted by a louder clatter. A large, sinister jingle, followed by two large thuds on the living room floor, and a grunt that's anything but human. I slowly turn my head. I can see it out of the corner of my eye, blurred at the edge of my vision. It's hideous. I don't want to look, so I freeze. It can't be real. I've become so lonely, my mind is fabricating lies, tricking me. It's got to be the onset of psychosis. I see the laptop screen yet again. It flickers, turns off, and on again. The screen now reads, "Krampus is in your house." Krampus? The mythical monster of scary children's stories? The Anti-Claws? Come off it. I don't believe in Santa. Never mind bloody Krampus. But the hooves take another step, pounding the floor. I can feel its breath firing against the back of my neck. It's humid, and the smell is abhorrent. It's approaching me, slowly, methodically. "Who's there?" I ask, and I scold myself for it. I've had too many sherries in too short a time. Alcohol isn't known to make one hallucinate, but that's not to suggest that loneliness can't act as the catalyst that makes alcohol do extraordinary things. It moves forward again, with a large jingle as it steps. Like it has bells on it, but not nice bells, not bells from a festive Christmas song, more like funeral bells, omens of death. Each rattle, another sinister reminder of doom. "Please leave," I say, but my voice comes out small and weak, and I barely hear it myself. "Please." I try a little louder, but I'm interrupted by a humongous roar. The force of wind emanating from its throat, sending me to my knees. I push myself to my feet. I have to get out. But I have to get to Henry first. I consider whether I should, then hate myself for it. I will not be such a coward that I will leave my son alone to die. I scuttle up the stairs on all fours like a cat, a sick, ill, drunk, scared cat. I reach the hallway and I feel it on my back. The ajar door of Henry's room is across the corridor. I run at it, and it closes. I reach the door, and I go to move the door handle, but it doesn't budge. It's not that the door is locked, but that the handle is in a stiff position, unmoved, unrelenting. I press down on it with all that I have, but that wasn't very much, and it's not enough. I bang my shoulder against the wall, but I'm weak, even when adrenaline tries to give me strength. "Henry!" I scream, but there's no answer. I look back over my shoulder. The shadow of the beast falls up the stairs, but the beast remains at the bottom step. I can hear its elongated pants as it waits for me to return to my demise. I'm not going anywhere without my son. I will not let myself. I mustn't be a coward. "Let me in," I scream at Henry's bedroom door. I swear that I can hear it laughing. I bang my shoulder once more. "As you wish." The door swings open. I rush to the bed to collect my son. Yet when I pull back the duvet, he's not there. I search every part of the room. Not a corner or crevice is left unexplored. Not a drawer or door not opened. And not a shadow unscrutinized. It becomes incredibly clear as I look in the same places for the fifth time that my son is not here. I peer out of the door. Across the corridor, I can still see that shadow. The beast. Krampus, if that's who it is. It has my son, and it almost has me. I have two choices here. I can accept my loss and run, or I can go back and request the safe return of my child. I doubt the second would be successful. But there's a window in this bedroom, one I can open and leap out of. There's a tree I can jump onto, and I can drop down from that to the ground, and then I can run, I can get some help, I can find the police, report Henry missing, say I searched everywhere, that I don't know what happened. Perhaps keep the whole Krampus thing to myself. But I know I shouldn't. I have a duty. I leave the room and I edge towards the stairs. I move as slowly as I can, but when I reach the top step, I can't go any further. I look down at the silhouette. The beast has horns. It's large and hunched over. It's dripping something from its mouth. The whole house shakes under its deep, menacing breath. I don't want to confront it. There's no way of knowing if Henry was there. Henry could have heard trouble and leapt out of the window himself. Yes, he could have. There's really no way for me to be sure. Therefore, me confronting it would be reckless. I go to return to the bedroom to leap out of the window myself when I hear it. Dad! Faint, but definite. My boy's voice, calling me from downstairs. The creature has him. It definitely does. Krampus has my son. Shit, I say. Somehow I'm still hovering on the landing, still halfway to the window, still halfway to freedom. It isn't coming after me. I could still make it out alive. I imagine my ex-wife's voice, high and screeching, shouting in my ear as the man she left me for stands there with his arms folded, shaking his head, judging me, as if the man who split up my marriage has any concept of ethical implications. I edge back to the top of the stairs. This is where I remain. This is where I stand. Let him go, I say, my voice coming out small and timid, as if it was hidden away in a box somewhere. I don't even remember telling myself to say those words, but they come out anyway. The thing just laughs, slow, intense, methodical laughs, each one another wrenching pain in my side. Please, I try, as if that would do anything. Manners maketh the man, but manners also maketh the man lose, as my darling ex once told our son. I bow my head and close my eyes. I've done nothing wrong, I say. The creature laughs again. I wish it would stop laughing. Every snort is another dent in my confidence, any that I still have left anyway. Dad, please. No. Why? Come on, I've done nothing to hurt you. I say this time with a little more conviction, but only by my standards. By anyone else's standards, I still sound like a pathetic, weeping mess. Give me back my son, I try with the same fake conviction. Come and get him. It speaks, yet it doesn't. Its voice booms, yet I only feel its vibrations. It doesn't move, but I hear its sound. Come and get him. It wants me to go down there and get him. I can't. I know I can't. But I also know that I must. I look back to the door. The tree through the window. It could be so easy. And to be honest, it would probably be the most sensible choice. What choice do I stand, after all? Surely I'm better off getting the police here. They'd be better off in a confrontation such as this. And as I make the decision, and my feet take me away from the monster, I feel its words once again. Leave now, and I will keep your son forever. It's just saying it to taunt me. It has no way of doing that. Then again, monsters have no way of existing, yet this one does. I return to the stairs and edge down a step, then another, and another, but I halt there. The third step is far enough for me. I can smell it, stale onions and damp. It has a moth-eaten robe over its back. It's more disgusting than I could have expected. And then I see him, my son, behind the creature's legs, on his knees, looking up to me, red eyes, red cheeks, and a shaking body. He is so scared, and I have no guts to do anything about it. Come and get him, or we leave. Don't take him, please, just go and let him. No, you come get him, or he comes with me. I step forward, and it chuckles. I wish I was stronger. I wish I was the father I wanted to be. I wish. In fact, do you know what I wish? I wish that I would stop wishing. I wish I would stop imagining things as they should be, that I would stop daydreaming about my ex-wife bursting through the front door and begging for my forgiveness. I wish I would stop imagining me beating up her husband, a man who deserves the title of man far more than I do. And I wish I would stop wallowing. I wish I would stop being this sad, pathetic shell of a person who lost his entire life when all he lost was a wife. She left, but my happiness shouldn't have. I take another step. Enough. Enough of this shit. Enough of being a small, measly morsel who has no conviction and no hope and no life. Enough of accepting being a weekend dad. Enough of allowing the man who stole my wife to judge me. Enough of this stupid fucking monster in my house. Let him go, I say. And I can hear it in my voice. I can hear the strength, the buzz, the confidence. I can hear who I want to be. I take another few steps down. If I stretched, I could reach out and touch it now. Give him back. Reach out and take. I said give him back. I step forward and find myself on the bottom step. I see my boy's tears. I see the face of Krampus. The face of Christmas evil. The face of everything that I hate about this fucking holiday. I will not ask again. It seems to smile, and I charge at it, closing my eyes, screaming, putting everything I have into it. My head smashes into the wall and I'm on my knees. I open my eyes and Henry sits in front of me. I look behind me and the creature's gone. And never make me have to return. I take my child in my arms and we cry together. I apologize. I start by listing things that I'm sorry for, such as for not trying harder, for not being there for him, for not fighting for joint custody. Then I run out of things and I just keep saying the words over and over and over again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And we never forget what we learned. And by next Christmas, we decide that I will have him for the afternoon and I'll have him on Boxing Day too. She leaves him to come back to me. She says she sees the man she always wanted. And then I tell her she can go fuck herself. And on Christmas Eve, just as we do every other year, we track Santa. And we place a little Krampus ornament atop the fireplace. A new tradition we create. A tradition that ensures that we never forget. As the final echoes of tonight's bone-chilling tale fade into the abyss, I want to extend my deepest gratitude to our fearless listeners who joined us on this holiday journey into the unknown. Before you venture into the real world, where the shadows may seem a bit less daunting, I have a few important announcements. First and foremost, a special treat awaits you at our merchandise store. Not really a special treat, there's just the merchandise store. Dive into the dark and mysterious with exclusive anthology of horror gear. Whether it's a t-shirt that declares your allegiance to the unknown or a mug for sipping your favorite beverage while contemplating the eerie, our merch store has something for every devoted fan. And speaking of devotion, let me remind you to explore the other realms of our podcast network. Join Scary Jerry on Demented Darkness and Dark Side of the Nerd for more thrilling narratives that will keep your heart pounding and your imagination running wild. Scary Jerry's tales will send shivers down your spine guaranteed, while Dark Side of the Nerd explores the fascinating intersection of darkness and geek culture. For those craving a different kind of thrill, head over to Rumble and check out Foxhound 43. Our resident game streaming edgelord is ready to take you on a digital journey through the darkest corners of the gaming world. Before we part ways, I want to express my gratitude to each and every one of you who makes Anthology of Horror possible. Your loyalty and enthusiasm are the lifeblood of our show, and we are eternally grateful for your support. As we bid you farewell, remember that the shadows are never far away. Until we meet again, stay curious, stay vigilant, and most importantly, stay tuned, because there are more episodes a-coming. Thank you for being part of the Anthology of Horror family. Happy holidays, and may your nights be filled with chilling tales and restless dreams. Stay spooky.
Oh my God, it's you. lights alive, lighting up the night. Meanwhile, I'm inside my room, conniving through the cheer and laughter that resumes. Tonight, tonight, I have to do it right now. So I will strike when all's asleep and creep.
Sneaking through your chimney.
Saint Nick is gone for now. Up on the housetop, gifts are mine. Kiss your Christmas tree goodbye.